Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, May 24, 2017. The UN Security Council questions President Kiir's National Dialogue.
2 days ago, the National Dialogue was inaugurated in Juba, but the circumstances lead us to believe that the premises are not so promising. For the National Dialogue to succeed, it must be genuinely inclusive, that is, fully representative of all of the opposition groups and the civil society.
And community leaders from Jonglei and Bunwa State sign a peace deal.
We have agreed to work together with my colleague Ismail Konyi, who actually has abilities to solve security issues in the region. I hope we are going to benefit from his experience, which will help us.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some news just in. The UN Security Council today unanimously extended the sanctions regime on South Sudan for another year during a regular scheduled meeting in New York. Speaking through a translator, Peter Eskov, Russia's deputy permanent representative, said although Russia supported the resolution to extend sanctions, his country's position remains the same when it comes to imposing measures to enact tougher sanctions on South Sudan.
Namely, solid peace in South Sudan is not going to be brought about by a Security Council arms embargo, but rather by progress on the political solution, as well as targeted measures for the disarmament of civilians, demobilization, and reintegration of combatants.
Japan's permanent representative to the United Nations, Koro Beso, says his country dispatched an ambassador to South Sudan to call on President Salva Kiir and other political leaders to follow through on their commitment to a permanent ceasefire and to participate in a national dialogue to achieve lasting peace and stability in the country.
The national dialogue will be productive only if it is genuinely inclusive, which requires a steering committee to listen impartially to all parties.
And Guin, France's deputy permanent representative to the United Nations, used her time to remind the Council that they should not assume the situation in South Sudan will improve anytime soon, even with the onset of rainy season.
Furthermore, over the past years, parties have never failed to use the rainy season to rearm. This is a constant in South Sudan. We have to take action to prevent these type of things which simply fan the flames of conflict. The imposition of an arms embargo would contribute to this.
South Sudan's Deputy Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Ambassador Joseph Moon, had this to say.
The national dialogue will be inclusive, free, credible, because the government will not lead the process nor control it. In line with the requests of the Security Council, request for immediate ceasefire as a vital prerequisite for any national dialogue to be credible, President Kiir declared a unilateral ceasefire effective from Monday, May 22nd.
The UN Security Council continues to meet at this hour on extending the sanctions regime on South Sudan. A UK-based think tank known as Conflict Armament Research says Sudan supplies guns and ammunition to various state and non-state actors across Africa, including South Sudanese rebels fighting the government in Juba. The group says arms sales continues despite U.S. sanction and arms embargo imposed by the United Nations and the European Union on Sudan. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
Conflict Armament Research says it has identified Chinese weapons and ammunition which Sudanese rebels with the SPLA North captured from the Sudan Armed Forces and other Khartoum-backed militias last year in the Nuba Mountains. Justine Fleischner, a Nairobi-based policy advisor with Conflict Armament Research, says even though multiple arms embargoes are imposed on Sudan, Khartoum continues to buy weapons from abroad.
The weapons evidence from the Nuba Mountains confirms for us that China remains primary source of ammunition for the Sudanese government, but that is in addition to weapons and ammunition that Sudan is able to manufacture domestically. And this is really something that Sudan has sought to expand over the past few years to manufacture more of their own ammunition for internal use and also for sale to other countries in the region.
Sudan's homemade weapons and ammunition are supplied to governments and rebels across East and West Africa, according to the Conflict Armament Research Report. Fleitner says there is indisputable evidence that Sudan supplied South Sudanese rebels with weapons.
There are some very clear patterns that emerged with nearly identical equipment being documented in the Nuba Mountains and then also being documented in Unity State that was reportedly provided to the SPLA-IO in 2015.
Both Sudan and the SPLA-IO rebels have repeatedly denied they have worked together on any arms deal. Fleitner says Sudan also imports drones from a Chinese commercial company and trucks from Europe. She says Sudan then modifies the trucks and deploys the trucks and drones to government soldiers fighting in South Kordofan and Blue Nile states.
This very clearly shows that the existing patchwork of restrictions has not significantly inhibited Sudan's access to military and non-military equipment.
Fleitner says the sanctions regimes on Sudan can be revised to end the loopholes on the supply of weapons moving in and out of Sudan.
By better enforcing existing sanctions and restrictions, or potentially by tightening due diligence standards by commercial companies that may not want their equipment being repurposed for military use.
Fleitner says other governments and militias that receive arms supplies from Sudan are found in the Central African Republic, Libya, and Mali. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Leaders from Jonglei and Boma states have signed an agreement to end recent wave of deadly fighting between armed youth in the two communities. The two sides agreed at a ceremony in Juba yesterday to return all abducted children and stolen cattle to their rightful owners within 1 month. Michael Atit attended the signing ceremony and has this report for VOA from Juba.
Representatives from Dinka Bor and Murle communities club and cheer after their leaders sign a cessation of hostility agreement and shake hands. The 3 pages document requires each community to appoint more than 30 members to monitor an immediate ceasefire between armed youth from both groups. Armed young men from both communities are required to withdraw from each other's territory and return to their state of origin. It also requires both communities to collect and hand over abducted children and stolen cattle to the National Committee, headed by First Vice President Taban Dengai, within 1 month. Boma State Governor Ismail Konyi, who signed the agreement on behalf of the Murle community, promised to work hand in hand with his Jonglei counterpart, Philip Aguer, to fully implement the deal. Speaking in Arabic to reporters after the ceremony, Konyi says the peace deal between the Dinka Bor and Murle communities should be an example to all South Sudanese communities that intercommunal conflicts can and should be resolved through a peaceful means.
This time around, we are serious about implementing this agreement, and we hope nobody should start attacking innocent civilians. Personally, I don't like the idea of abducting children and stealing cattle. It is good that we will discuss many of these issues in the coming peace conference.
Konyi says he will work with Murle elders and traditional leaders. He says to dissuade them from engaging in hostilities with their Dinka Bor neighbors. Jonglei State Governor Philip Aguer, who signed on behalf of the Dinka Bor community, promised to work with Konyi and other stakeholders to fully implement the deal so that both communities can focus on economic development. Speaking in Arabic, Aguer says both Boma and Jonglei state leaders have the ability to end the fighting.
We have agreed to work together with my colleague Ismail Konyi, who actually has abilities to solve security issues in the region. I hope we are going to benefit from his experience, which will help us.
Bishop Daniel Deng Abut of Jonglei State Dub Diocese of the Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan applauded the leaders of both sides.
You could see that there was a compromise, that people come together and be able to sign. So I am aware that there are some obstacles there, but as we open that window of people talking, those grievances and obstacles will be run over.
Murle community leader Hassan Korok says he hopes the agreement will stop the bloodshed. Speaking in Arabic, Korok says losing the lives of the young, energetic people hurts the South Sudan's development.
The two communities were able to come to a final decision that killing doesn't help the country. So if the agreement is honored, it will save more lives of our young people from both Jonglei and Boma.
Interior Minister Michael Changjek, the head of the South Sudan Peace and Reconciliation Commission, Chol Rampang, and UNMISS Chief David Shirar were among those who witnessed the signing ceremony. First Vice President Taban Dengai, who helped broke the agreement, says the national government cannot invest in Jonglei and Boma region unless the fighting ends.
Your area is just a big zoo, the biggest zoo in the whole of South Sudan. That means renewable resources. It's not a depleted resource. You are sitting on a giant block of oil, potential oil in your area. But we cannot bring tourism to your areas now. We cannot develop those reserve of oil because of lack of security. Give us peace so that you develop.
The agreement requires the two communities to work together to investigate crimes committed during the recent waves of violent clashes, to arrest the perpetrators and hold them accountable. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Yei, where residents of Yei town say they can no longer afford to buy meat due to hard economic times caused by the recent deadly violence in the area. Some residents say they only eat green vegetables. The price of 1 kilogram of beef has risen from £300 to 600 South Sudanese pounds in the past 6 months. A local official says traders have agreed to lower prices of beef, as we hear from Daniel Friday Martin in Yei.
Butcher Peter Tombesapen Samasete and chops meat from the ribs of a slaughtered bull at his shop in Yei's Dar el Salaam market. Many locals can no longer afford to buy Tombe's meat. Gabat resident Charity Dudu says she does not remember what meat tastes like anymore. Seated on the veranda of her house, Dudu chops green vegetables known locally as Dodo to prepare a meal for her 6 children and other family members. Speaking in Arabic, Dudu says these greens are all she can afford.
Half a kilogram of meat is over 300 South Sudanese pounds, and I cannot afford to buy meat. We have stayed for the last 3 months without eating meat. Today I will cook dodo, and tomorrow I will change to beans and cassava leaves and come back to dodo.
Dodo says unless South Sudan's leaders restore peace and stability in Yei and elsewhere around the country, living conditions will continue to deteriorate.
Peace is the only solution to bring food and love, because if we have eaten, I will stay with my sisters in happiness. People are traumatized on what to do to feed their families.
Tombe says meat prices have skyrocketed because of the rampant insecurity and the depreciating value of the local currency. He says in order to make a small profit, butchers are forced to sell a kilogram of meat at a minimum of 600 South Sudanese pounds. Speaking in Arabic, Tombe urges state and national officials to restore peace so cattle dealers supply more meat to butchers.
What led to the high prices is that we are in critical conditions. A cow in the market is half buying a car. A kilogram of meat is 600 South Sudanese pounds. Cows are very expensive. One bull costs 80,000 to 100,000 South Sudanese pounds. My message to the government is to open the roads so that more supply is brought for sale and prices can reduce.
Tombe says customers are no longer buying meat like they used to because of the high prices. Before July, when a first wave of violence erupted, butchers in Yei's Dar el Salaam market used to slaughter 5 to 6 bulls per day. Today, the butchers sell meat from only one bull in 2 days. Resident Sabina Yabo has come to Dar el Salaam market to buy a kilogram of beef for her family. Yabo says in Arabic that this is the first time in more than 3 months that her family is going to have a meat on the table.
We are depending on greens such as beans, leaves, okra and the other vegetables. And those are the only things we are eating. In a month, we may eat meat just once and I cannot even buy a kilo. Because I have a big family and we have forgotten eating meat.
Both Dudu and Yabo blame the government for failing to enact consumer protection laws, including imposing price controls on food staples like meat. Yei River County Commissioner Dennis Lasuba says the local government will buy an unspecified number of head of cattle from neighboring countries to be resold in Yei at subsidized prices. He says officials and local traders agreed to cut the cost of meat and other food items.
The goal now is, within 7 days or so, we can reduce the price down to 500. Within a month or so, if the activities are going normal and more cows are coming in, we want to reduce the price. Target is to be 300. We also believe that we can work together by providing the escort so that we can arrange for some to come here at a reasonable price.
Health workers here warn that without a proper balanced diet, the rate of malnutrition among children and childbearing women will likely rise in the area. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at why South Sudanese fail to get proper drugs to treat malaria. Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the best advice you've ever gotten?
My parents used to tell me that respect yourself, respect others, and love your nation, and do something good for it. So this advice is actually important, and I hope I will keep doing it.
I think it's from my mom. She told me never to ask anything from a guy when I was young. You know, like we girls, when we are growing up, you have expectations, you want this, you want that. So she told me if I ever want anything, I do not hesitate telling her. I think that's the best for me because it has helped me to move on. It has helped me to not ask things from guys.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Doctors in South Sudan's Imatong state are warning residents in Torit town against the misuse of antibiotics, a practice they say increases disease resistance to drugs. Doctors say many patients visit clinics and pharmacies to buy painkillers rather than buying the medication they need because they cannot afford the prescribed medicine. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Torit.
Under normal circumstances, a person suffering from symptoms of malaria would have blood samples tested in a laboratory to determine if they have the parasite which causes malaria. The test costs 50 South Sudanese pounds. If the test comes back positive, the person would be required to start treatment. In a local clinics and drug shops, it costs about 700 South Sudanese pounds to buy one dose of artesunate, one of the latest anti-malarial drugs. Most residents say they cannot afford that, so instead they walk to a pharmacy and buy a painkiller such as paracetamol to relieve the headache and pains associated with malaria or typhoid. Imotongi State Torit resident Jacqueline Joseph brought her one-year-old daughter to Torit Civil Hospital today. Joseph says it is the third time this month she is seeking malaria medication for her baby. Speaking in Arabic, she says most of the time she does not get the required medication because the drugs are too expensive.
Malaria or typhoid was halbus there ayanal gazilo mafayantan.
Malaria, typhoid, and diarrhea is what is disturbing my child, and there is no proper medication. They often refer us to buy medicine from the private clinic, and since I do not have money, what do you expect me to do? Malaria drugs like quinine syrups cost 250 South Sudanese pounds, and for typhoids, one dose of injection cost 150 South Sudanese pound. Where do I get this kind of money? That is why I give the baby only painkillers like Panadol.
Another resident of the Imotong State Capital Torit, Joyce Finney, says although she regularly takes her child in for medication, he continues to fall sick from malaria. Speaking in Arabic, she says many locals believe painkillers cure malaria.
When I brought my child to the hospital today, they took his body temperature and found that it was too high. But when they give the child Panadol, the temperature dropped to a normal level.
Rebecca John sells medicine at Hope Medical Center in Torit. She confirms that many patients who visit her pharmacy do not have enough money to buy the required malaria drugs and often request only pain-relieving drugs.
We have these people coming to take antibiotic, like this one, headache, and then action. They used to come, even many of them, when you tell him you want to take this medicine, this Panadol, you are treated what in yourself? He's just telling me that I have headache, then I don't have money to go and to do test in myself because I don't have money. You just give me this Panadol to reduce the headache.
Doctors say taking antibiotics helps the parasite that causes malaria or typhoid to develop resistance to drugs and hampers efforts to control malaria. Dr. Sebit Martin at Torit Civil Hospital says much more needs to be done to educate people about the consequences of not taking the right drugs to treat malaria and other diseases.
They look at the price of amoxicillin, like here we sell it at 50, then Panadol is 20, so they rush into Panadol just in the name of helping the headache and reduces perhaps the pain. In that way, we feel we have not solved the problem, but we have just calmed the pain. This means the bacteria itself will continue multiplying.
Dr. Martin encourages all patients to first get tested before buying medicine.
So most people here have an attitude that injection is better than tap. But when they are referred, since we are all medical personnel and we look at the cost, this is the way we always tell them it is better to take this Cipro instead of ceftriaxone.
According to the Worldwide Anti-Malarial Resistance Network, malaria remains one of the most devastating infectious diseases, with an estimated 212 million infections and 429,000 deaths each year, especially among children under the age of 5 in sub-Saharan Africa. The UN World Health Organization says Plasmodium falciparum, the deadliest form of the malaria parasite, is responsible for the vast majority of the malaria-related deaths. Artemisinin combination therapies, or ARCs, are the main treatment against this form of malaria. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
Still on health matters, the newly elected Director General of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, says health as a human right is at the center of his vision for the organization he will soon lead. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA on the first news conference given by Tedros since he was chosen in Geneva.
Former Ethiopian Health Minister Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus is the first African chosen to lead the World Health Organization. He beat out two other contenders for the post by winning 133 of the votes cast by 185 WHO member states. Tedros says the overwhelming vote of approval gives him the legitimacy he needs to implement his vision for the WHO, and for him, he says, the concept of health as a human right will be at the heart of whatever he does.
Half of our population doesn't have access to health care, universal health coverage. Health as a rights issue, an end in itself, and also health as a means to development. All roads should lead to universal health coverage, and it should be the center of gravity of our movement.
Tedros assumes office July 1st. He says he wants to accomplish many things over the coming 5 years. Besides universal health care coverage, Tedros says another major priority is to reform the WHO to make it a better, more responsive organization.
The campaign has ended, as you know, officially, but I think more work begins actually now. And I know it's very difficult. It's going to be tough. It's not going to be easy. And you know it, but I also believe that together we can make a difference.
Director General-elect Tedros says a first order of business will be to strengthen the WHO's ability to respond swiftly and effectively to emergencies. He says epidemics can strike at any time, and the WHO must be prepared. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Hallelujah. That's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with a gospel song entitled Utukuzwe by Solomon Mukubwa.
Ukiwa ndani ya gari lako, ukiwa ndani ya basi unasafiri, ukiwa unafanya kazi ndani ya ofisi yako, jiunge pamoja nami, tumwinue Bwana, tumwambie wastahili, uko mwenye nguvu. Ikiwa uliamka asubuhi haukumwambia kitu Mungu, wakati wa kumwambia Bwana utukuzwe, uinuliwe. Tujunge pamoja kwa wakati huu, tumwambie Bwana wastahili. Ikiwa unakuwa kwenye maombi ya kufunga na kuomba, ebu tujunge pamoja, twende. Hallelujah.
Mungu wetu mwenye nguvu ni Baba wa milele.
Mungu wetu mwenye nguvu, Baba wa milele.
Ebenezer, Baba wa milele.
Mungu wetu mwenye nguvu,
Baba wa milele. Wanipa mema, wewe ni mwenye nguvu, Baba wa milele yote.
Mungu wetu mwenye nguvu,
Baba wa milele. Nguvu zako zashangaza dunia, uliumba mbingu pasipo nguzo. Hewa ni Baba,
wewe
ni mwenye nguvu,
Baba yangu wa milele.
Uko mwema Bwana, matendo yako ni ya ajabu sana. Neema yako, fadhili zako pia, asubuhi ni mpya tena, zanifariji moyo niamkapo Baba.
Neema yako, fadhili zako,
neema yako Baba, dadi wangu
niamkapo.
Nikikosewa na maisha, wanipa tumaini ya kupata maisha Baba, wajapo nicheka majirani wangu, wewe nipo upande wangu. Uhimidiwe Yawe,
neema yako, neema
yako,
asubuhi
Baba,
oh Baba,
sanifariji moyo
niamkapo.
Wanipa tumaini la maisha Baba yangu, oh duniani natembea nawe Baba yangu.
We have been listening to Solomon Mukubwa with the song Utukuzwe. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Natembea nawe baba.